Welcome to A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby, your weekly dose of health, wealth, and everything else.
When someone we love leaves this world, we're never the same, but sometimes that deep loss becomes a quiet invitation to live differently, to love more deeply, and to find gratitude in the moments that remain. Today on A Bit of Insight, we're talking with a woman who turned heartbreak into healing and used her story to help others do the same. I'm Lisa Mosby, your host. And you're listening to A Bit of Insight. You know, this month, our theme has been grief with gratitude all month. And we're talking about how we transform life's hard goodbyes into lessons that help us grow and how those lessons shape our lives. Today's guest is Chris Rodriguez. And I usually call her Money Coach Chris. She is a money coach, an author, and a speaker that teaches others how to create health. Healthy, authentic relationships with their finances. But today we're talking about how we create those same relationships with ourselves. She's the author of the book Rewired for Wealth, Heal Your Financial Attachment Style, and Build a Life that actually fits you. She's also a creator of a heartfelt children's book series that's coming out soon, so keep your eyes open for that. And this introduces mindful money lessons to our young readers, and I think we need that. You know, kids today don't even know what a quarter, dime, nickel is or how to make change. So she's really acting powerfully in the world of money. But before she was a coach or an author, Chris was a daughter navigating the loss of her mother at a young age. A moment that rewired her heart, her perspective, and ultimately her life's purpose. So welcome. Thanks for being with me today, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a few tears beforehand, both of us sharing moments. And I said, we just have to hit the button because there may be tears and that's okay. We don't have to stop crying because when the heart aches and we don't always have the answers. Nor do we need to have the answers. You know, that's what we're here today is to just to talk about and create a space for you to find peace and healing. So it's a tender, powerful topic, and we all experience profound loss in our lives. Can you take us back to the moment in your life losing your mom? You were age 5. Do you remember anything about that time at all?
Yes, I do. In fact, I still remember the day that I was told. And it's crazy. And I also like look back on memories, like I have to ask myself, are they memories like that are real or are they like from pictures? Right. And so I'll know like if it's a real memory that I have that I remember her, I was obviously before 5. And then if it's not her and it's like picture memories or whatever, then I'm like, oh, I was after 5. So it's before 5 and after 5. but yeah, I still remember the day that we were told. I was 5 at the time. My mom and dad were divorced. And so my brother and I would go to see our dad and stepmom on the weekends or every other weekend or whatever that was. I don't remember as a kid. I just know we'd go see them. And my mom had passed away one of the weekends that we were there, and we went back. They brought us back to because my brother and I were living with our mom and grandparents at the time. And so we went back to their house and we walked in and I was like, why is like our dad and stepmom coming in with us? Like, what's that? And it was the day that they told us my grandparents were crying and they told us that our mom had passed away. And so I still remember that. And I still remember like waiting until my dad left to cry because I felt like, oh, I can't show that emotion. And I don't know where that came from, but I still remember that day. And I'm 47 now. So it was over 40 years ago. But yeah.
Did you understand what that mean when they said passed? Or, you know, I never had kids. I never had to break that news to kids. And I can't imagine what's going through your head. Like maybe we have some parents here today who have to share that with a young child or a grandparent that has to share that with a young child. You know, from your perspective as a 5-year-old, did you understand what really happened? What was going on?
I knew it was bad because my grandma was crying. But yeah, I don't know that I knew exactly. I felt like I don't know if we had death that happened before that, or I just knew she wasn't coming back.
Okay, so that did make sense that you weren't going to see her again and she wasn't coming back. I know that was a long time ago, and there's no way that you could probably even think of the word gratitude at that time. But now looking back and holding on to those memories, many people don't think that grief and gratitude can coexist. And I didn't either until going through the grief of my mom and dad and where I got to be grateful for that time with them. But your story proves kind of that you can, that I believe that gratitude can come out of that because you have some great stories, both with your mom and then when your grandmother passed, like how it resonated with your heart and the things that came up and how much deeper your love for them grew within you. How did you find that gratitude inside such deep loss?
Well, it's interesting because so my grandmother had been, since my mom passed, a really huge female mother presence to me. I think that's why I'm showing so much more emotion is really more for my grandmother. And she was such a powerful person in my life. And I always thought, oh, when my grandma passes, I will just be devastated. And the opposite happened. The difference too was I got to go or be with my grandmother along her journey. So while she was in hospice and while she was, in the hospital, I got to like kind of witness the process that people go through when passing, when dying. And I used to think it was sad, and now I see that it's beautiful, right? It's something that we all go through. We're all born and we all pass away, we all die. And that process of passing away and that process of seeing your loved ones like getting ready to, pass on to the other side. When my grandmother passed away, where I thought I'd be devastated, I was actually filled with gratitude and I had so much love. It was almost as if I always would joke, like so many things were happening great in my life at that time. And I was like, it's almost as if my grandma was up there like, hey, God, help her out. So I just had a sense of love and gratitude, and especially that I got to spend the last 10 years of her life with her. But then being able to talk about my mom and what it was like, because I was always told by my grandparents and other family members that I had looked and had the same mannerisms as my mom. And so it was like I was her spitting image, and I would get told that all the time. And so I had at least gratitude for that. And then with an always wishing that she was still there, because I was like, I bet we would have been great friends.
The fondness can grow deeper because you are so connected to her mom, your grandmother, and you get to experience that through them. And I'm sure I can't even imagine, they already raised her daughter. They already went through those first 5 years or the 5 years to 20 or however old you were when you started to move away from grandma. They got to be through go through that with you and see all of that with you, where oftentimes parents move away from their grandparents, and grandparents don't get to see their grandchildren be reared and see how they turn out. But they get to influence not only their daughter, but their granddaughter in the woman that you became today. That's, yeah, what a wonderful gift to them. If you can get there and think about that, they have this horrific loss, but yet they have this wonderful gift of this deep bond as a grandparent with a grandchild. I saw that with my own parents. It was part of the reason that I helped to move them closer to their great grandchildren in Florida. I moved them across country when they were starting to fail, and they had this life surge of joy and energy, and they were seeing the grandkids every day, and they got to have relationship with the grandkids. And I was really nervous when my niece decided to let the kids be with them. She did hospice. We brought my mom to her house. My mom lived with me, but when we knew it was coming to an end those last 6 weeks, we brought my mom to her house and turned the living room into her hospice room. And the kids would lay in her bed and watch TV with her. And they were there and they were laying in the bed with her when she took her last breath, as they were with my dad. We had 18 people in the room with my dad. And I can't comprehend how children can understand what's happening. And yet they just show up as these bundles of love, just holding on to them and kissing on them, and like this wired connection starts to happen. And I hear that in your voice when you talk about your mom and tell stories, whether it's the ones that you remember or from the pictures. Like there's a different kind of wiring that happened for you because all you had was a memory, not a presence, not a physical presence. There was no fights or bitterness or any of those things that oftentimes happen between mothers and daughters. You just have this pure ball of love for that. Can you talk to that a little bit? Like, how do you experience that differently than maybe other people do?
Well, to be honest, at first I thought it wasn't good because I thought. So the other part of that is my mom committed suicide when she was 27. I was 5, so I took it as she didn't want me. So I took it as I wasn't good enough, and I realized that's not true. And my grandmother was the one that helped me realize that. And she said, she was sick and, there's a lot of mental illness that went into that. And my grandmother would tell me all the time, she's like, I spent tens of thousands of dollars on this and I'm going to tell you for free. You do as much as you can with the information that you have at the time. And sometimes when people's brains are just wired differently, there's nothing that you can do to help them. So it wasn't that she didn't want me, it's that she loved me. She just couldn't bear to be here anymore. And once I understood that, and once I realized that, oh, that's not true, like the stories we make up in our head, right? Well, I'm not enough. Well, that's not true. I am enough. And she just didn't feel like she was enough, right? And so when you can switch that perspective and see it in a different light, it's like, oh, I get it now. And I tell you, like, they always say, like, God picks the best parents and family and all that for us. I think, my grandmother was the best grandmother that I could have asked for. And when we moved to the same town that both my grandparents had lived in, I got to experience them with my kids. So not only was I super close with my grandparents, but then my kids were super close with their great grandparents. And it was just beautiful to see that and be able to just really understand things that we go through or see as a kid. And we make up stories about that isn't always completely true. And if you can shift your perspective and rewire like what that meant to be something more out of love and gratitude, then it changes everything.
Changes you physically. So you not only changed your mindset, but what happened with your confidence and your sense of security? Because our sense of security as a child comes from our parents. And I know you still have your dad and your stepmom and your grandparents, but there's a different connection with the person that birthed you, that carried you in your womb, in her womb. There's a sense of security. And I know for me, I mean, I was in my 50s when my mom and dad passed, and it feels like I'm an orphan, alone. Like these weird, crazy emotions keep coming up through the grieving process. And a lot of it is that sense of security. Can you speak to that?
So for me, it's I'll tell you, when I was younger, when I was a child, I had very, very low self-esteem because of all that. And it wasn't until I was older, recently, in the last 10 years, I would say even, that my confidence really shifted. I always called it, I had fake confidence. Like I would show up like, yeah, I'm good. I know what I'm doing. But deep down, I wasn't actually confident. And it really wasn't until my grandma died that my confidence came out. And
See.
I didn't feel like I was alone. I felt like I had the protection of God and of her, like just looking out for me. And it's harder because you don't have somebody to talk to. But my relationship with my grandma was amazing, and we talked every day, multiple times a day. And so I think she did a really good job preparing me for her leaving.
And creating that confidence and, the woman that you grew into, your attitude, your mindset, your ability to love. You know,
Yeah.
so like that, the compassion and kindness. I know you personally, so I know more about who you are as a person than our audience can know. But your compassion and your kindness, and how completely generous and giving you are of yourself when you had a bit of a rocky road starter. You know, I mean, wow! Like how did you get to be that person? Which that's what I'm amazed with. So I want to shift gears. We'll lift some of the levity. Maybe we could dry up some of our tears a little bit, and let's talk about your book. You know, Rewired for Wealth explores the financial attachment styles, and we hear attachment styles in the emotion code or in different areas of life. How did your grief influence, and maybe you haven't thought about this, but do you think it's possible that your grief influenced your understanding of emotional and financial attachment styles? And maybe did this in some way contribute to the writing of your book subconsciously?
Absolutely. So, I had been talking for the last several years about our relationship with money, but I couldn't ever like pinpoint it on something. And me, as a financial expert, when I'm supposed to know all the right things to do, wasn't always doing it. And I realized as I was doing some work with my therapist on attachment styles, and where attachment styles come from, you know, from what we experienced as a kid and growing up and all that, my losing family, losing my mom, and then I lost my dad young too. Losing people in my life so young gave me this thing where life is short, and so if I have money, I want to go make memories. I want to go make experiences. And when I connected and did a lot of research on that, I call it the experience creator, as one of the attachment styles. And typically, people that have had kind of like a rough start where they lost loved ones very early on, have that kind of mentality. Well, anything can happen at any time, so I'm going to go out and spend money to create memories, right? Where you should be like, well, yeah, but I also need to save and do all these things. And so how we're attached to our relationships with people is also very in line with how we're attached to money. Because think about it, money, we have a relationship with money. And even though we're supposed to make decisions logically with money, specifically in investing, our decisions are mostly made emotionally. And if we don't have a strong, secure emotional awareness of how we show up in relationships and in finance, then we might be oblivious to why we're continuing the same cycle of habits that we have, whether they're good or bad with money, just because of our emotional relationship with money.
What are some ways that people unknowingly connect money to love, loss, or safety?
Oh yeah, it's everything. Every like, people connect so much with money to love, loss, or safety because maybe you grew up in an unstable household. So you're like, oh my gosh, if my account doesn't have so much money in it, then I'm not safe. Or, you know, people are always leaving, so I have to control everything. Or I was, you know, however your relationship was or your experience growing up as a child, everybody has different things. It's really shaping how you see money now and how you show love, not only for yourself, but for others. So whether you're consistently giving gifts, even though you shouldn't, or you're hoarding so much money because you don't feel safe if you're not, or you're like, no, I have to control everything. I have to be the one that does everything because I can't trust that other people will. So all of those things create those attachments to money.
I'm experiencing that right now. I'm thinking about how I'm hoarding because, you know, after going through divorce and then losing parents and all of those things. So I'm feeling like, oh, there's not enough, there's not enough, there's not enough. I got to work harder, there's not enough. And then I'm on this other side of, oh my gosh, life is so short. And, you know, my dad said he never regretted the trips that he took. And you know, he's like, you have to go do this. And you know, his favorite, we talked about his favorite places being New Zealand and Okinawa, Japan. And he's like, you've got to get there. It's something that you have to see. And I'm like, pay for that, but I gotta go do that because I need to have these experiences. Like, though, that's some of the what do they call it? The hamster wheel in my head with these attachment styles. And you know, I've been in business a long time. I've made money. I've been successful, and yet I still have these. I'm gonna call them anxieties, or you know, hamster wheel is all I can think of, is like the racing mind around these things. Are there things that we can do to stop the wheel, like to get off the hamster wheel?
Well, yeah, so one is just being aware of how
Okay.
you are wired. And then that way, once you understand, oh, that's why I do that, then you
Yeah.
can kind of like say, like, whether you're experience creator or gift giver, let's say. And so you would typically, you're spending way more money than you should be on gifts and or experiences. You can understand that, one, knowing that, thinking that that's the only way people are going to love me, or that they know that I love them, one or the other, you can say, oh, that's not true. So just doing some work with that internally, but then also creating rules and boundaries for your money, so that you're like, okay, I'm still creating this plan. I hear some clients would always say to me, well, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, so I'm not saving. I don't even know if there's going to be a future me, because I'm probably going to die young, or I'm going to do, whatever. So they don't save anything, and then they're struggling. And then you have the people that are like, oh no, I have to save everything because I don't want to struggle, because they experience struggle, with their parents or grandparents or what have you. And so having a good, people always ask me too, well, what's the best attachment style to be? I'm like, I think it's a little bit of all of them, and understanding what they all mean and how they show up and how you show up in that. And then creating rules, boundaries, and habits around money so that you can be saving, you can be paying your bills, and you can have fun. You can do all the things, in moderation, and creating systems for everything.
Yeah. For listeners who are grieving or healing and they're kind of working their way through some of these financial situations, if you're an executor of an estate or you have your parents' home to manage or finances doing their final tax return, what are some simple ways that we can begin to rebuild a sense of financial peace and stability?
So one thing I want to say with that is, a lot of times I experienced this myself when I lost my grandmother. When you inherit money, it hits differently. What the amount is, whatever the amount is, but like I was like, oh, that's Grammy's money though. I have to be very careful with it. A lot of people have this thing, well, I don't want to spend it because that was so and so's money. Do you know what I mean? Or they feel
Oh,
very
sure.
guilty. I have clients that inherit millions even, and they don't know what to do. They don't know how to act, and they feel like this sense of guilt and shame for having it.
Yeah.
They would rather have their loved one. And then I've seen on the flip side where they didn't really love the loved one. And so they're like being greedy. I think the biggest thing I can say is, that money was left to you with love, whether you think they're a great person or not a great person. That money was left to you with love. That person put money away for the future. A lot of people want to leave a legacy, even in their legacy mindset is with money. And so they're leaving you something to do something powerful and great with. So something that you can take control is just look at it with a space of love and gratitude, like we're talking about, and create a plan and say, if this is more money than you've ever had before, then create a, like, what is it that you want? What are your goals that you want to accomplish? Not just for you, but for your family and for your future. And then just make a plan, have a plan. If you don't have a financial advisor or somebody to talk to, get one. Even if it's not that much money, and you want to do something good with it, maybe if you don't necessarily need it because you're financially okay, what kind of charities or foundations can you give money to? It's just, when we change it from like a grieving type of, oh, that's so and so's money, I don't know what to do with it, to just, this money's coming to you with love, then you make a little bit better choices and decisions, and you make them with love.
Yeah. And I know some of that probably came from your grandmother. Do you think that their your grandmother especially, her influence seems to like echo through the work and through your writing? Like, are there lessons that she instilled in you that are still guiding you today and kind of helping you to formulate some of these ideas that you share with people through your work?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And when I wrote the book, it was a big healing journey for me as well, because of also all the research that I did with it. And I know that, one thing Grammy always said to me was, we do the best we can with the information that we have at the time. And Now, as my kids are growing, because they're in their 20s, I take a lot of things that I learned from my grandmother to not just do well for myself, but to help teach them as well. So, yeah, she definitely instilled. And the other thing, too, to remember, she grew up in the Depression era. So it was a whole different thing. They really strived on safety and security and didn't overspend or didn't do anything, lavish or anything like that. But they got to retire early and travel. And so that's the other part of like they got to experience things. And so for me, it just instilled having a good balance in life, So, and I think that's where, when you're looking at your attachment styles and is this good or bad, they're indifferent. They're neither good or bad. They are what they are. And it helps you to understand how, what you can do and how you can be the best version of yourself.
I think that's the beauty of it is I didn't know what I didn't know. And then I start reading through those attachment styles and I'm like, oh, okay, let's make some adjustments over here. I don't want to continue to be in that. A little bit of that is good. Exactly what you said. A little bit of each of these attachment styles, but it's our attachment styles are really a compilation of our life's experiences. And so I'm going to shift gears again and talk about your children's book series. Understanding money early on. I was grateful that my dad taught me to save, and he taught me about compound interest before I was out of junior high because I started working and making money babysitting and things. And it was like, you can watch that money grow. So I had money set aside for college that I saved for myself, for my, education later in life. So I was grateful for that. We see that a little bit. We have 529 plans and other ways that parents can save for their kids, but the parents are doing the work, and you are bringing this in and empowering and causing responsibility within kids. Do you see this part as part of maybe your mother's legacy, being so young when you lost her, part of your grandmother's legacy? I know there's probably an influence there, but do you want to talk a little bit about why you've decided that you're gonna head down this path with the children's book series?
Yeah, I think it's, in my family growing up, we didn't necessarily talk a lot about money. It's just what I saw, what I witnessed. I was taught that you don't talk about money. And I think the children's books really was inspired more by my kids. And because of the questions that they asked me, like they grew up with me being in finance, right? So I would do things and tell them and teach them. And really it all stems from all of this work really stems from one question that my son asked me. And one time we were in the car and he's like, well, mom, how much money do you make? And my response was like, well, I'm not gonna tell you. And then he's like, well, why? And I'm like, because I was always taught to not do that. And then he said to me, well, how am I supposed to know what to do if I don't have all the facts? And I was like, oh, wow. And then, you're growing up in this, you're in the society where I grew up, like you didn't talk about money, especially how much people had. We never talked about numbers. And it was something that you're supposed to keep to yourself because, you don't want to be flashy. You don't want to, be seen as less than or anything like that. And I realized like how can we have these conversations with our children? And that's up to the parent whether they want to give dollar amounts or not. So in that conversation, I ended up telling him how much money I made, but I told him, I run a business, so it's different when you're a business owner because you have revenue that comes in, but then you have all the expenses, and so you get to keep this much money. So a lot of this came from, my mission to change how the world sees money. I want people to talk about money in a healthy way. So in my kids' books, they're designed in a way, and they'll be coming out soon next year, getting that all ready, but it's designed to take the kids through an adventure to be learning about money and not just all the how-tos about money, but we're also bringing emotion into the books as well. So not only what can you do with money, but how does it feel to be able to do these things on your own or with your parents or whomever. And I also created parents' guides for the books as well, because I realized that, we didn't grow up talking about money. So how do you talk to your kids about money in a safe way and in a way that you don't necessarily have to talk about dollars and cents unless you want to? I always am a big fan of talking about expenses because I don't want kids to think, oh, money just grows on trees and I could just buy whatever I want and do whatever I want, and that there's consequences for things. So this series will be able to help that, help kids understand the concept of money, what money is, how do we do things with it, and then also all the emotions that come with it. And then the parents' guide helps the parents continue these lessons with their kids.
It's amazing. I can't wait to see it. And I, for multiple reasons, because I know somebody who might have done some of the drawings and character creation artwork. Yeah. So, and involving a kid in doing that, a child involved in doing that part of it. Like, again, that just shows your kindness, your heart, your generosity, and how you have this inclusive nature in how you show up in the world. Let's wrap up here. What's one final message, maybe of hope for listeners to walk away with, when it comes to gratitude through what they're receiving in money, gratitude of getting to spend those final years with a loved one? Let's tie that all into and express what does it mean to be truly wealthy?
Oh, to be truly wealthy. I think for everybody it's different. For me, it's relationships. Having good relationships and being able to spend time with the people that you want. To me, time is our most precious resource. And so being wealthy, you can be wealthy at all different income levels. And so being wealthy is that you get to be able to spend time with the people that you want to when you want to. That's what I define wealth as. And so for every person that might be different income levels, and you could be wealthy at all different income levels and different asset levels. It's just being able to spend the time and having gratitude, whatever you're doing with whoever it is that you're doing it with, being truly present in that moment and not having to worry about anything else.
I would agree with that. My wealth is in my relationships, not necessarily in my bank account, because that's what we want to take with us. Yeah, even the wealthiest people, when they're on their deathbed, it's like, I wish I had one more minute. Or the wealthiest people, I wish I could spend all the money in the world to have a little bit more time with my mom or my dad, or be healthier. Wealth looks a lot different than just money, and sometimes we lose sight of that. So thank you for that perspective. Final thoughts on people who are grieving. We're going to see a whole generation. Our baby boomers are aging, and we're going to see a whole generation of people who are going to go through some trials and tribulations with money, taking care of their parents' estates, whether it's their mother, father, or combined. There's challenges that are coming for us as a nation as our baby boomer population ages out and moves closer to going to be with the Lord. Final thoughts on how we can prepare for this, or can we even prepare for this shift, and how we can support our loved ones that might be experiencing it, or our friends who might be experiencing or going through this.
Well, for me, it's different ways. Like one, there's all the documents with estate planning. So make sure if you do have aging parents and or maybe it's aunts or uncles or whoever, grandparents even, whoever you're taking care of, as you will, making sure that everything's documented, all the estate plans are in place, that they have beneficiaries. That just eases the pain so that you know exactly their intention of where they want funds to go. The second part of that then is to don't when you're grieving the loss of that person. But if we can just know that love is behind everything, in the end, then it's fine, and just receive that money with gratitude and love, then that can actually shift and change a lot of what you end up doing with that money.
And we see a lot of siblings that, their relationships diminish after the loss of their parents. So that's a tough one. You and your brother, age 5, age 8, then lost your dad when you were 20-ish. How did that affect your sibling, you and your sibling relationship?
So it's my brother and I, and then we also have a sister from our stepmom and dad, and we're all very close. I say it's because we don't live by each other. So we're all a little bit like, my sister and I are the closest, about 2.5 hours away, and then our brother is maybe 8 to 10 hours away. But we are all still very close. And I think it's through those tragic moments that We just came together, and I know not all families and all siblings are like that, but I don't know why we're so strong in our connections. But I think it's too because, we're not so we just love. We love each other, and so we could go for a while without talking to each other, but we just pick up wherever we left off. And so for me, I experience life with loving siblings and loving family. My dad was one of, I think, eight children, so lots of aunts and uncles and cousins to lean on as well. And then my mom, who passed away when I was five, had a brother and uncle that lives close by me, and he has kids and everybody. So just we had a big family, and the big family support was wonderful. I know that that's hard too, because I know families that aren't close, and that's where you see sometimes when people pass away, then they fight about money because they don't see it that it's coming from love, or they don't see it from that way. But in the end, I always say money amplifies who we are, because some people say, oh, more money causes more problems, or you're going to become evil or whatever. No, if you're a good person, it's going to help you be even better. If you're a crappy person, yeah, you might make some crappy choices, but just I'm my goal this year is to just be love and show love. So my advice is just receive anything that you get with love and gratitude.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. Thank you for sharing that. And that's a common bond that you and I have. I get to hang out with my mom's siblings, my aunts and uncles, and my cousins on Saturday. We're going to the apple orchard, and I can't wait. We did it, I think it was 5 years ago, 6 years ago. It was quite a few years ago, was the last time I hung out with them when I was visiting Minnesota. So I'm excited about that. Thanks so much for sharing your insight in how grief can transform. It transforms our hearts, our habits, our values, the way we live. We are just a product of all of those experiences, and grief is a big one, and it's profound. Every one of us is going to go through it at some point. So thank you for shedding some light on it and being vulnerable, because this is not an easy subject. And we knew we were going to cry, and we knew the tears were going to come, but that's nothing to be ashamed of. That's just part of how we process both joy and sorrow and grief. So wherever you are at, folks, just go through the process. Don't get stuck in it. And Chris, where do people find you, and how do they get attached to your book?
Oh, perfect. My book's on Amazon, Rewired for Wealth. And you can find me. I'm on all the socials, Christina Rodriguez or Money Clarity Co. And my website is moneyclarityco.com.
Beautiful. All right, folks. Thank you so much for joining us on A Bit of Insight. Until next time, remember, gratitude doesn't ease grief, but it can guide us gently back towards peace and grace. And that's what we hope for you. See you next week. Come on back, everybody. Thanks for joining me on A Bit of Insight. To get more involved with our wellness community, grab a copy of my book, Live Well, Travel Far. Or to explore our travel offerings, visit the website at insightcenterforwellness.com. And if today's episode gave you something to think about, leave a review and please share it with a friend. This is Lisa Mosby reminding you to live well, travel far, and always follow your insight.